Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 23rd, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm a very groggy Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very happy, excited early morning Scott Long.
This is the earliest, right, we've ever done the show? Right?
Pretty sure that it has to be, because I don't think Chris Cassez has ever been up at 8:25 except when I drag you to the airport early.
Well, never this early for the show. I've been early for surgery at this time, and I've been up for legal things. But other than that, if I fall asleep during the show, please don't get upset with me. It's just my natural sleep cycle kicking in.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to hear me talk anyhow.
So. Yeah, that's what I figured. So you're on the road again. Go.
Atlantic City, baby! You know, Atlantic City is like this... it's like the bad boyfriend. You know, there's so much about it that I don't like, but I still keep coming back because I still like it for some reason. It's so weird.
We won't give up till you conquer Atlantic City for the magazine. That's what it is.
I mean, I tell you, the big thing up here is in the Mid-Atlantic. I started the strip in Baltimore a couple days ago. I'm in Atlantic City now, and I've got a long way to go. I am bankrupting the company on tolls. I really cannot believe that there's not a single road anywhere in any of these states that isn't paid for already.
Did you pass the toll that when you passed the toll that time when we were together, and you had to back up to pay it? You remember that one?
Oh, I do remember that one.
Did you see that toll yet? You probably saw it. You had to have seen that toll, right? Because you went to Delaware Park.
I would have had to, yeah. Maybe I was just still fuming from the $8 back there to the $6 toll. I mean, in Florida, the toll's a dollar. Here's a dollar. All right, whatever. Fine. Yeah. And I didn't even get upset about that. And I pulled up $8, $4. And now I got to get change.
It's crazy.
But speaking of change, the one that really gave me the red ass on this trip is coming in Atlantic City. There's a 75 cent toll. No change machine.
Just
who
making
carries
a buck?
Three quarters in their rental car?
Oh man!
And it was worse as I had two. I had 50 cents left over from another one that did have a change machine. So and I have a whole bunch of change in my backpack, which was in the back of the car. So I had to stop, get out. And then I get out and look on the ground, and there are quarters all over the ground. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Chris Cassetto would have been excited. You've been down the ground just scooping them all up. So I reached down and grabbed them, but they were squeezed into the asphalt.
Oh, man.
So you couldn't pick any up. So then I actually had to go back and dig through my backpack. 100 people lined up barking at me. But I'm not going to drive through. You could drive through and then call this number and pay later. But I'm not going to do that for a 75 cent toll.
Right.
No, I'm going to tick people off. If this is what Atlantic City wants to do to keep people from coming to gamble here, that's what they're going to do.
75 cent toll, that's so weird.
You just make it a dollar. I'd pay the extra quarter if I could just put a dollar in there. I mean, the convenience factor alone is worth the extra quarter.
Yeah, plus the amount of traffic that backs up has got to cost them something too. You know, I mean, just give them the dollar and be over with. Jeez.
I would think so.
Man, that's crazy.
But yeah, enough about my whining. I'm up here specifically because Maryland Live is opening up next week, actually. And so I want to give a little preview tour of that. I'm sworn to secrecy until the media day, but I will say that it's very... You're going to want to check it out if you live anywhere near the Baltimore area. But what's been very interesting, obviously, is I've been driving around Delaware. Now I'm in Atlantic City, but everybody is talking about specifically Maryland Live. I mean, obviously, Hollywood Perryville was the first Maryland poker room to open about 6 months ago, but a little smaller. It's opened at 8 tables, now it's 10. But Maryland Live is 52 tables in this major mall, shopping mall, 5 minutes from the airport, and everybody's talking about it and what it's going to mean for the market. And obviously, you know, anytime there's new competition, the existing players get a little worried. I guess the point I want to bring up in talking about this is that it's just a reminder to players that as much as competition benefits us as players, it sometimes can hurt us. And I think one of the problems here is that, you know, if you live close to one of these other rooms, you're probably going to go to Maryland Live and check it out, and you probably should, and obviously they're going to have a ton of tournaments and great action and everything, so there's plenty of reason to go there. But at the end of the day, it's convenience, right? You're always going to want to go to the room closest to your to your house or work or wherever it is, unless it's just a terrible room. But if these new bigger rooms open and pretty much suck all the players out of your room, that's not great for you, is it?
No, that's when it hurts. It's if it does hurt. I mean, I'm sure that Perryville and all the other rooms are thinking, you know, it's the shiny new toy, but eventually you'll go back to your favorite toy and whatever, and then you might lose a couple of people here and there, but you also might gain some people too when they see that what that place isn't doing, what you could be doing or whatever. So, no, you're right though. If it does, although there aren't a lot, they happen, but there aren't a lot of poker rooms since we started the magazine almost exactly 5 years ago that have shut down because other rooms have opened. I mean, there are a few, but not a lot. So, especially when you just open a brand new one and then another brand new one opens. Even I would even consider like the Delaware rooms to still be new. I mean, I know they're not new, but they're still only like 3 years old or four, you know, whatever. So,
well, yeah, and that's what's really funny about them is that they're now the old ones on the Atlantic City's the old ones on the block, but. You know, because then Pennsylvania opened after that, and Pennsylvania casinos are doing phenomenal business. I was at Parks yesterday, and, you know, just people are flooding that room. And then now Maryland's a new. So it's keeping up with the Joneses. It's never going to end.
I mean, I guess I would say that there's more positives to competition than negatives in this industry, but it could just
a matter of, as long as you don't mind your cheese being moved, to use the good old workplace book. That your things are going to change a little bit in your local room, regardless of how it is. And as long as it doesn't change too much, it's all right. And now you've got another place that you can go that's an hour and a half away that's going to be exciting. So yeah, we'll see what it means. But definitely a lot of trepidation from the competitors up here and definitely a lot of excitement from the players. So
lots of pressure on Mike Smith, our good friend who used to run the aisle in Florida here. Now he's running Maryland Live. That's, I mean, all eyes on him right now. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and that's a very funny point. I'm glad you brought that up. That obviously this is a dream job for him. I mean, he ran a terrific room in Florida, Isle Pompano, and it didn't seem like he ever wanted to leave. But this was an opportunity to open his own room, which he's never done, and not just open a room. You know, everybody's talking about it, so that's very exciting. But at the same time, everybody's talking about it, so. You know, some high expectations that you have to hit. And, you know, let's be honest, when you open a room, I mean, I remember back when Horseshoe Cleveland opened, the casino in general, not just the poker room, but the casino in general, there was 2-hour waits to get in.
Yeah.
And that tends to rub people the wrong way. And I imagine that's going to happen here. I mean, his room is going to be full spread for the first however long. And it's just a matter of whether people want to wait 30, 40 deep on a wait list to play or not. So there is a downside to success as well, too.
I remember way back in, I guess it was 92, when Foxwoods opened, and we were in Connecticut, and we were backed up on Route 2 in the car for hours before we even got to the building to wait to get in. It was crazy. So, I mean, you never know what to expect, and yeah, you're right, it has a negative effect. I think we actually turned around and went home. I think we were like, this is just crazy. It's not worth it. It's going to be daylight soon. You know, I mean, it's just crazy. So, yeah, that could hurt you too. That's, you know, build it up so much that you're turning people away. That's not good.
Well, definitely catch up everybody on my travels on next week's show, which will tape a day late because I'm flying back on Thursday. But having a good time so far. And I'm assuming you're going to get the show up at some point today. So last minute notice. We had a real organic Ante Up meetup coming together tonight. So if you're in Atlantic City tonight, four or five of us are meeting at Harris at Atlantic City at 8 o'clock to play the tournament. So if you are one of the early adopters that's listening to the show right away, come out and see us tonight.
That's where we had our meetup when I was up there with you.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I got to tell you, when we got to Dominican Republic, when we were traveling to there, we were still at the airport, you walk over and you throw me this little plastic container. And I'm like, oh, and he said, here's the Big Blind movie. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get back home to watch this. You know, Scott and Tom Turley talking about how great it is and stuff. So I got home, and a couple of days had gone by, and I was still not feeling very well, so I hadn't even thought about it. And then I remembered I had it, so I said, oh, I better watch this, so I'm going to talk about it on the show. And I've got three words for you. Worst movie ever.
What?
And you'll notice that I took the word poker out of that phrase, because it transcends poker and becomes just the absolute worst piece of celluloid I have ever been exposed to in my life. I just don't understand what you guys could possibly see in this movie that would make you say, oh, Chris, you gotta see this.
Ah, that is just so disappointing.
I will give it back to you if you want it back. That was how...
I do. Obviously, you're not going to watch it.
Oh, that was the absolute...
Oh, the rounders loop at Shea Cosenza.
Worst thing I have ever laid eyes on. I don't know what to say. I don't... What were the redeeming qualities of this movie for you, other than the fact that it was taped at Lake Elsinore and you could...
I thought it was hilarious. I laughed from beginning to end. Everything in it was just spot-on hilarious.
Spot
and part
on.
Of it, obviously, is that it's very low budget, probably no budget, to
no
be honest.
Budget, yeah.
And it just is full of poker cliches and stuff. I think I said back when we initially talked about it, I certainly don't think it deserved Oscar nomination, so it's not that kind of great movie. It's just a good, campy, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm watching this kind of movie, where I think... You probably watched it the same way I did and just don't have an appreciation for that kind of awfulness.
See, that's what I mean, though. I have better things to do with my life than waste an hour and 50 minutes on awfulness. I would rather just say, you know what, the movie's awful. Why waste my time doing that? Let me go chew on some tinfoil instead. I just don't get it. I don't get there. There's nothing good about this movie other than seeing
at the scene where the woman is in jail and she keeps calling her husband at home. That was hilarious. Yeah. Her boyfriend or whatever it is.
Don't spoil it for everybody. Hey, they're gonna want to see it after this.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Oh no, there was just, again. It's and I'm sorry if I misrepresented it to the Indian Nation. It is not a quality movie. It's just so train wrecky awesome.
What I did like seeing, you know, was Jennifer Harmon, you know, before she even had the kidney operation, when she was still having her trouble, she was really young, and Dan Negreanu in there, who looked hilarious, and, you know, and a couple other people. And, you know, Scotty Wynn saying, you know, your secrets are for you, baby. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so bad. Oh, man, I kept doing face palms throughout the whole movie. I didn't know... I just thought, all right, these guys just played a real elaborate trick on me. They said, you know what? We want to screw Cosenza here. Let's talk up this movie, make him really excited to see it, and then laugh as we know that he's being punished for 2 hours at his house. You know, like the Dominican Republic when I returned from there sick. That wasn't punishment enough. You had to let me watch this movie too. Thank you very much.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, pure pain, pure pain.
Oh man! Well, I'm hoping this other movie that I saw a trailer for is not pure pay, but it probably has the potential to. But so this has been a couple weeks since I saw the trailer, but I went to see White House Down, another phenomenally awesome movie that you're probably going to hate. but definitely watch it so I can confirm that you have absolutely no taste in bad movies. But the trailer, you know, one of the 190 previews that they put up now. No wonder you're at the theater for 3 hours these days.
Yeah.
But one of them was for Runner Runner, which is the new movie written by the Rounders guys. It stars Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake, and it's all about online poker and, you know, down in the exotic jungles of Costa Rica or something like that. Obviously, it's a trailer, so every trailer, even the trailer for Big Blind made it look awesome. So, you know, we'll wait and see how awesome it is. But I give it high hopes because it's from the Rounders guys. It's got a good cast, and it seems like it's fast-paced. And so I'm definitely waiting for it to come out. It's coming out at the end of September, I think. Mm-hmm. But our good friend O'Malley is on the forum saying, this is terrible. This is once again, it's reinforcing the stereotype that all of us poker players are thugs and criminals, and this cannot be good for poker. And of course, I'm putting my rose-colored glasses on, which O'Malley drives O'Malley crazy, and saying, you know, hey, let's have publicity. And maybe this is something that the lawmakers can take their lawmakers and saying, see, this is why we need to regulate it. So what side are you on, Chris?
You know, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe, but the thing is, I just don't think they would do that. I don't think that, you know, there are enough politicians out there that would see this movie and use it as their own propaganda to pass a law. But I don't know. I also think that I've seen the trailer too. I mean, I'm always on IMDb and always looking for new trailers and stuff to watch. And I saw this and I thought, this is a bad movie, but I want it to be good, and I think you're right. The fast paced stuff there is probably going to be there, but I still, and I know that if these O'Malley, these writers of Rounders are indeed involved, and they'll try to keep that part authentic. But I just get the impression that that's going to be like the least used theme throughout the movie. That it's how he gets into trouble, and then the rest of it's just chasing people around an island trying to, you know, justify their killing or something. I mean, it's not going to be, hey, some strategies to poker or, you know, whatever. But,
well, that's true. But, you know, I guess the storyline is that Justin Timberlake is this super smart college kid that does really well at online poker and then gets cheated and goes down to find Affleck, the guy that owns the online site, and confront him, and then ends up becoming his right-hand man.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, so it's a little bit more than just a cat-and-mouse chase kind of movie. I think it's, you know, one of those human flaw kind of movies as well too. And but, you know, I would be really, really dubious of it if it was written by anybody else. But yeah, I think most people agree, these guys nailed it with Rounders the first time in accuracy. Obviously there's a couple things that we all pick apart, but for the most part it was a very authentic poker movie. And this one, obviously, I think is a bigger budget, higher pressure, so, you know, they need to get the big stars in the action, so they probably don't have as much leeway to be as authentic as they did in Rounders. But I give them credit, at least, that it's people that they have a track record of writing a good poker sound movie before.
No, absolutely. I'll be on record as saying I think that the poker is going to be absolutely minimal. It's going to be mentioned early in the show that he got cheated on him and he was real good at it. It'll be one of those little, you know, put together a little montage of clips of him raking in big pots online and all this crap,
montage.
And then 10 minutes later he's in, you know, Ben Affleck's company, and then I forgot, this movie started out as poker. You know what I mean? It's gonna be like that. I have a feeling it'll be like that. I would love for it to be more than that. I don't know, but I'll let you waste the $10 to go see it.
What's great now is you have lower expectations now. It wasn't like Big Blind that you went in because trusted me in explicitly that it was going to be an amazing movie. Now you're really, really disappointed. Well, now you're going to go in thinking it's going to suck.
Because I came to my own conclusion. That's why. I didn't have to rely on you. When I rely on you, I'm always disappointed. So I got to do it myself with the rudder. But, I'll let you spend the money to go see it. You tell me how it is. And then by what you say, I'll know if I want to see it or not now.
Well, you know, I'll pay the $10 to get in, and I'll let you in the back door like I always do. All right, it's each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and the Hand of the Week, we'll send them something fantastic. This one comes from our old friend, Turdzilla. And he actually sent it quite a while, so it's a little dated, but the concept is universal. So he sent this in long before the World Series started this year, and he said, I was thinking of diapering up and entering the seniors' $1,000 donkament at the World Series, but the last thing I want is for my family, friends, clients, or wife to know I won more than $100 playing poker. Do you have to grant permission for the WSOP to use your legal name for publication and broadcast?
That's a good question. I seem to remember having to give them my license because you had to have the Harrah's card at the time, you know, the rewards card. So for them to do that, they had to put it on your card. So if your receipt has your name on it and your seat name and whatever, I mean, unless you're going with a fake ID or something, which you can't do. So I don't know. I don't know what, especially for broadcasts and stuff, they'd say to you're in this event, this is our property, you're going to be on TV if you're in it. So I think that's what so they make sure, because even when you see the guys who don't want to show their cards, they're pulling them aside and saying, if you don't show your cards, you're going to get a penalty, and then I've seen them do that on the coverage. So I don't know what extent they would go to pressure you to do it, but you have to give them your legal name, I'm pretty sure. I know that when Sam Minatello, our good friend, was doing well in the World Series, he gave them like a fake name to put on the chip counts or something, and they did it, but it was like a joke, and then eventually they fixed it. So I don't know.
That was a long time ago, yeah. There's been a lot of a lot of technological advances in it now. I mean, as you mentioned, obviously you can't enter a World Series event without a total rewards card, and to get a total rewards card, you need to give them a driver's license. So if you look through all the results, you don't ever see Turdzilla, not because Turdzilla is not good enough to win, but you're not able to go and say, hey, I got these goons that are following me trying to collect on stuff, so can you just put a fake name? Not going to happen. So Here's the problem is that, and a lot of tournaments are going to this, and being a publishing company, I'm very happy with it because I get tired of these, oh, John C. won last night. Wow. Yeah. What do we do with that? So, but particularly one rooms with the Bravo system, which is what the World Series uses and most poker rooms does now. Even on the your receipt, it's a implicit agreement that you're by entering the tournament, you're agreeing to X, 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 and X, which is always that we can release your name in the media, and we can use your likeness however we want without compensation, blah 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 blah.
Right.
So the end shot of that and most tournaments these days, if you don't want people to know that you won, then don't enter, and you don't win, and then you don't have that problem.
The real shocking thing here to me is that we have someone old enough to enter the senior's name with the name Turdzilla. I just didn't think Turdzilla was 50 plus, I thought he was like 28.
Turd's been around for years.
Turdzilla. Oh, man. All right, well, call the floor. If you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker game or your favorite poker room, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, give us an email at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. We don't need Jody this time. I answered this pretty easily the other day. I think it was me. And it comes from Sean Davis.
But it's one of these things that I think that that people are a little confused on. So.
Yeah, no, I know. But I'm saying we just don't need Jody. We can handle ourselves.
Oh, yeah,
ourselves.
That's right. I'm not going to feel bad.
He says, we were playing a multi-table home game tournament, and Big Blind announces raised and then grabs 14 $100 chips, or 100 unit chips, to make three stacks of eight. Player then reaches back into his chip and grabs two more to make three stacks of eight. So he says, a player in the hand says, you aren't allowed to do that because it's a string raise. I say he can do whatever he likes since he announced raise. We didn't argue about it too long, but allowed the full raise to stand. Any thoughts? I told him what he can do is he can go back and forth to his stack as much as he wants as long as he announces an amount to get to that. Mm-hmm. If he didn't announce amount and he took these stacks and he put them in the betting area in a betting motion, once he did that, that's all he's allowed to raise. And if it doesn't constitute enough of a raise, since he said raise, he's allowed to go back and get the chips to make the minimum raise. But
he's forced to.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So if he says an amount, if he says I raised to 6,000, he can go back one time, one chip at a time, if he wants, because he's verbally held to that amount. But it's pretty simple here. The problem is that if some people like to take their stacks and put them a little bit in front of their initial stack and then count out their chips and everything, so it's not really their betting motion or the invisible betting line that everyone sort of assumes is there, that's when you start to get into trouble, because it's like, is that where you're betting, or are you betting when you push them forward, so whatever's clear there, wherever he's actually putting the bet, then that's the amount he has to bet. He can't he can't keep going back into a stack unless he's declared an emergency.
Yeah, I think the key is the forward motion, because most rooms actually don't use a betting line. There's a betting line on the table, but then they say it's not really in effect. It's just a matter of, you know, anything you're doing to indicate that you're acting at that point is where you're going to get in trouble. And yeah, you know, I understand the confusion here, because I see that before too. It, by saying raise, it's not a get out of jail free card. It's not you can spend an hour there deciding how much.
Right.
You know, just verbalize the amount. And but you know, it does get a little difficult when you want to count out chips, because you know, I know sometimes you want to see how many chips you have, and that just be sure you're doing it really close. Actually, behind your cards is the safest way to do it, I've heard, for most poker rooms. Because once it goes up in front of your cards, that's really the forward motion that most rooms will use. So, you know, keep your cards far out there with the cap on it.
Yeah.
Count out all you want, and then once you push them forward, do it all at once. Or better yet, at that point, once you've counted out, you know what you're betting, just say
it. Don't ever put your cards behind your chips. Some poker rooms will say you're all in. I went through that the first tournament I ever entered. So.
Yep.
Make sure your cards are always out, nice in front. Put a cap on them so they don't grab them, too. So... A lot of precarious situations that you can encounter at a poker table. So,
be careful, absolutely. It's dangerous out there, kids.
Hey, you know when you go on vacation for a really long time and then you come home and how good it feels to be home? This is going to be like right now, because we're going to complete an O'Malley's move, and I get all warm and fuzzy when we complete it. So let's refresh our memory from part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're still at that same $1, $2 typical no-limit hold'em cash game. We rebob for another $200 and sit with around that. The under-the-gun limps, plus one folds, MP calls, MP2 folds, hijack calls, cutoff calls, and we're on the button with the jack of diamonds, nine of hearts. This isn't a great hand either, but with $11 in the pot, we're going to take a flyer. We limp. The small blind limps and the big blind checks. Seven of us going to the flop, $14 in there, and we see the queen of spades, jack of hearts, jack of clubs. That was a fortunate flop. Unfortunately, it gets checked all the way around to us. We're set up quite nicely. We decide to make a stab, hoping it looks like a button steal attempt. We make it $8 to go. It's folded all the way around to the cutoff, who calls. This opponent is a new player to the game of poker and has been getting lucky all night. He's got a huge stack, easily covering us, and loves to chase any kind of draw, even putting the pressure on when he has one. There's about $25 in the pot, and the ace of clubs comes on the turn. Suddenly, the cutoff wakes up and bets the pot, $25. It's to us. What's our move?
I think the problem with new players is that it's almost impossible to read them.
Yeah.
And obviously, I like my hand here. Trip Jacks is a nice hand. But it's also possible that we're behind or could fall behind. So... When it's very difficult to get a read, and I'm not saying you can't read a player that's new, it's just that they might think their hand is a lot better than it really is. So, you know, even if you get a read on them, it may not be the right read. So in this case, I'm just going to be inclined just to call and then use my savvy bag of tricks against the more experienced opponents where they have a better chance of working.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a problem with just calling. You know, there are a lot of hands that beat us at this point. There are quite a few hands I can imagine, whether he's new or not, you know. And the fact that he chases draws and sort of a, you know, it's a draw-type board and stuff, I wouldn't mind waiting a street before I make a bigger decision. You know, I just hate that little caveat that he gave us for the cutoff player. It just makes me curious about what kind of cards he plays and
right.
You know, whatever. So I wouldn't mind. I mean, I love Trip Jacks. I don't think our kicker is fantastic, but I would like to wait one more street, I think, maybe control the pot a little bit, see what he does. But overall, you know, I like our position, and I'm not too worried about this guy. I just don't want to get too fancy on him either. So, all right, here's part two.
Hello again. What could he have here? Is this a hand like King-Queen? Wouldn't he have bet the flop with a queen? Maybe this could be Ace-Jack. But would he really be betting pot with ace-jack in this situation? Wouldn't he want to string us along? I gotta be honest. This feels like ace-mid, draw, or king-10, and only one of those beat us. We make it $75 to go, and he quickly puts in enough to stack us. If we were deeper, this might be a tougher decision. In this case, we make the call. Our opponent tables ace-10. We table our jack-9 and quad up on the river. Yep, the case jack. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you get the monster. I hope to see you on the felt.
You know, he always buries the lead, Chris. He had no, he did not tell us that the opponent was you.
Very funny.
But I'm glad it worked out for us. But I think that's when we both said this could have easily gone either way. And I definitely try to avoid trouble when I don't need trouble. And by raising here, I think we invited trouble. And again, it worked out for us, so that's great. Yay, Gus. But I try to avoid those trouble spots if I don't have to get into them.
Absolutely. I mean, he shoves on us now. And now you're put to another... Another
exactly.
Freaking, you know, there was no reason for that. I mean, you got all the money in, and you're happy to get in with jacks, I guess. But he could have just as well had a jack with a better kicker, very easily there, or had a straight, and we need to improve. You know, I mean, it's just, and when they get that excited, or when they're that new, and they chase draws, and then a draw gets there on the turn, it's like, oh man, you know, that's just, I don't know. I would have waited to see what he did on the river instead of doing that, but you know, kudos to him. He got all the guy's money and actually quadded up. So that's always sweet too. But yeah, I think I would have called, just waited to see what happened on the river. But another good O'Malley's move. You know, can't complain.
Absolutely,
can't complain.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Remember to send your hands or situations to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. And this one, I guess, is a borderline Hand of the Week situation, so we'll see which way it goes. But it comes from our old friend Adam, a frequent contributor. And it comes from a home game with quarter 50-cent blinds. Good old kitchen table game.
Yeah.
9 of us at the table, he says, there will be 2 villains in this hand. Ooh, a little multi-layered. In general, the players in this game are average at best, and it's a game where you routinely walk away with a significant profit, 2 to 5 buy-ins, depending on the night. Villain 1 is under the gun and raises to $1.25. Under the gun plus 1 and 2 both fold, middle position player raises $2.75 and it folds to me on the button. I look down at ace, queen of hearts.
So we have an under the gun raise. Now, again, I assume that because he routinely walks away with a significant profit, these aren't great players, and they're playing 25-cent, 50-cent, so they're, I mean, you know, no limit hold'em, that could still be a pretty big pot, but it's not exactly a huge game either. I mean, that's what we play when we play our Skittles games, when it's no limit hold'em, whatever, so it's not that they're
It's really tough to cut those Skittles into quarters, too.
But we get an under-the-gun raiser, and then a guy in the middle re-raises. So that, if these guys know anything about poker, they're literally sending out all these red flags that, hey, under-the-gun has got to have a decent hand, and middle position should know that. And by him re-raising, he has to have a hand at least as good as what he would have had to raise with under-the-gun, and maybe better. So when it gets to me with ace-queen of hearts, I'm a little cautious. But... since he walks away with 2 to 5 buy-ins every time, routinely, I don't think these players are that good. I don't think they understand that concept. So I think ace-queen of hearts might be a decent hand here. So with position, I may call and then see what the under the gun guy does. If he just calls, then I know I'm sitting pretty, I think. So yeah. Normally I might, if I was playing a tough game, I would fold that hand. Easy. I really would.
Yeah, right.
But this seems like it's not a very tough game. Just from the description. So, and I don't want to re-raise with ace-queen because it's not that good. I'm not going to risk any more money. But I think in position with ace-queen against inferior players, I wouldn't mind just calling and hoping that the under-the-gun calls. And then for $2.75, I might be able to break some of these guys. So, I think I would call. In this game, I may call.
Yeah, I think this is one of those interesting hands where we can analyze it two different ways. One, how he would normally handle this situation in a normal game, and then also how he would handle it in this game. Normally, I'm folding ace-queen after any raise, particularly an under-the-gun raise.
Yeah.
I actually had a long conversation. I went to the Orioles game the first night I was up here with, I guess, our assistant ambassador for Maryland, and great guy, we talked a lot about ace queen, and I'm like, you know what, I think if you do it a study, maybe somebody has done a study, the most money lost at the poker table has to be with ace queen, I think, because people just can't get away from it. They're easily dominated against ace king, and my game has been phenomenally improved by not getting these situations. If I'm first in, I'm raising with it all the time, of course. But if it's a raise, particularly under the gun, and particularly then re-raised after that, it just shrinks up. I'd rather have seven deuce because then I don't have to think about folding it.
Yeah.
But you make a good point. Obviously, if this game these players are pretty weak, they could be making this under the gun raise with ace four, you know, any ace really,
yeah.
And then re-raising with ace seven, you know, for all we know. So you don't want to lose any value at it. And it depends what our stack is, too, at this point, too. But if I've consistently taken 2 to 5 buy-ins out of this game, I've got some money to gamble with. And not that I want to gamble with it, but obviously ace-queen of hearts is a hand that could flop really big. So it's a hand that I might be willing to take a risk with.
Yeah.
All right, so our hero says, now, knowing both these players, here's some info. I know that they are both very loose and aggressive and can raise with garbage, face card, and X unsuited. I also know they both slow-play monsters. That being said, there's a solid chance I have them dominated.
Well, you could have told me that before I made my comments. Wow. Now I'm clearly playing ace queen.
So we go ahead and raise the 625.
Whoa! I don't know if I would have done that. Wow. Okay. Well, I don't know if I would have done that. I think that these raises are enough to get the rest of the field out, and why would I want to risk 625 with ace queen? Who's under the gun shoves now on us or something? Then what do you do? Yeah. You know,
not have ace queen. Again, we're inviting trouble here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just like the O'Malley's move.
Exactly right.
You know, it's 275. It's already probably borderline call anyhow. And let's do that. You know, you're right. The blinds are going to get out of the way. We're going to be three handed, and we'll see what happens at that point. But
absolutely.
Now opening it up, somebody's going to be, you know, particularly if they're very loose and aggressive. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, Christmas in July. Put all that money in there now. Now I got to shove, and I don't want to face the shove here.
Yeah, no. I don't like that play. I like that play in, like, a aggressive game where you know these players, because that's easily a squeeze. You know, not the end of the gun. It has to really have a hand. The other guy has to, you know. But even that, it's a tough squeeze, too, because you got to re-raise in the middle there. So if that re-raise is telling you he has a good hand, it's not like you just called. So it's a scary raise there to me. I would never have made that raise.
All right, well, he does. The blinds fold, and Villain 1 says, that's a blatant buy attempt. And calls. Villain 2, who really plays almost every hand, calls with just a quick sigh. So the flop is Queen of Spades, Trey of Hearts, King of Hearts. The end of gun bets $1, and our hero says, what? Into a pot like this? Villain 2 calls, and it's back to us.
Well, there's almost $20 in the pot, so and we took the lead. It's not a fantastic flop for us, but it's really good. We got middle pair and a nut flush draw, so there's no way I'm just calling. I mean, I would raise significantly here, especially since I took, with the way he played it, control of his hand with that re-raise to 625. So there's about 20 in the pot. I would bet I would raise to like $16 here. What's a dollar? Yeah, let them hit their card for free or whatever. A dollar? No way. $16 coming out right now. And depending on how much I have, I mean, I don't even know how much I have. Did he tell us how much we started with?
No, I didn't. We don't know. So.
You know, if we have $30 or something, I may just put it all in, you know, or whatever. But I don't know what he has, so it's hard to say how much to bet. But I would be betting like $15 here. I just can't imagine what anyone's thinking betting a dollar here. They're just either showing their ignorance or being a pain in the ass.
Yeah. All right. Well, we do raise to $750. Not as much as you'd like, but still significant, obviously. seven times the Ray, or seven times the bet.
Man.
And he says, villain one is appalled. Not as appalled as we are that he bet a dollar. But he's appalled and thinks for a few minutes before asking what I have behind, and I tell him $8.75. So, yeah, at that point, you're right. I would have shut.
Oh, yeah, you only had $16 or whatever, $17. Yeah,
might as well. It's going to get in anyhow, right?
Yeah.
So he raises by precisely that much, so obviously he had us covered. At this point, I'm debating whether I fold or call when Villain 2 stands up and makes a scene of pondering. Sounds like a great band name, right? Oh, man, I can't believe a scene of pondering is playing tonight.
Oh, jeez.
Eventually, he calls as well, too, which is an all-in call for him. He has 50 cents less than us, so very negligible side pot if we decide to call. And it's back to us, and I think we have an easy answer, right?
Yeah, we were beating him into the pot there. And the best part is that the other guy is all-in, you know, so it doesn't delay the inevitable of finding out what happens on a turn in the river and, you know, whatever. So, yeah, we're all-in, he's all-in, let's get this over. Flip these bad boys up.
All right. We say, well, Villain 1, I know you have a king in your hand, and so does Villain 2, but I have Alice, and he just made it worth it for me to call, so I do. We turn over our cards, and sure enough, Villain 1 has King 9 offsuit. Oof. Love this game.
Jeez.
Villain 2 had King 10 offsuit. Really love this game. and they're both ghost white when the Queen of Diamonds hits on the turn and a blank on the river, and I take in a huge pot and a huge profit as the night is almost over. Now, it goes on to say, the only person faulting my call was someone not even in the hand, who almost always loses. And I tried to explain my logic of 14 outs, lots of money in the pot, boosting my pot odds, and the fact that the other two don't have many outs, etc., etc. He was not buying any of it. So whose thinking is flawed? Also, did I play this raid given the circumstance, or did variance just happen to play in my favor? Not that I'll argue with variance once in a while.
Well, I mean, the fact that he raised pre-flop scared me a little. I now we know absolutely what kind of players we're dealing with, so the raise is probably deserved. But I would not have done that. Other than that, well, no, I would have bet more, too, on the flop. So I think their betting amounts, to me, and when he's betting, it might be a little off from what I would do. But, you know, we're not professionals. We're just giving an alternative. You know, the pro might come out here and go, oh, he played it perfectly. So I don't know. That's the beauty of this game, is everybody plays it differently. So, but I don't think you made a mistake calling. There's no way I'm letting that hand go with the nut flush draw, an over, and a pair. There's just no way I'm letting that hand go. And the other thing, too, is that I'm trying to figure out how much these guys are buying in for. Because if he walks away with a 2-5 buy-in, you know, profit, and he only had $16 or whatever at that point, that means he only had about 20 to start the hand, and it was at the end of the night. So was he having a bad night leading up to that? Now he's desperate to win, and that's why he did it that way? I don't know. But, I would never have folded there. There's no way. No way. With a nut flush draw and you're getting that much on your money, not a chance.
Yeah.
And
particularly knowing how light these guys are. I mean, and he's right. I mean, it's weird. If you put them both on kings, then obviously you're behind technically, but you're probably obviously still the favorite with the hearts and everything. But wow. Here's the thing is knowing these players play this badly obviously helps you, but at the same time, this makes it a very tough game, doesn't it?
Sure.
You're just really, I mean, you're going to be forced to play weird hands like this, and I say weird because, again, I probably would normally fold ace queen after all this action, but you're forced to play that, and then you're forced to make another tough decision on the flop. I mean, let's say, I mean, what would we do if the hearts weren't there?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the thing. If the hearts weren't there, I let it go because I only have, in my mind, two queens, if that might be good, and then maybe three aces. But if it was a regular game, I would have put somebody on ace king there, and I would have either folded it. And if I had played it and I put it on my ace king, you know, then I'm like, well, the king's there. I'm dead to a queen and two outs. So I'm not, So no, I would have folded then. But given the outs with the hearts. And the other thing, too, you were talking about this type of game is so difficult. It's bad enough when players don't really know the strength of their own hands. And then on top of it, they're wild and loose. Then you're like, whoa, that's like a you know, what a quinella of you know, I mean, that's just crazy of what to deal with there. That's hard to deal with. And, you know, to walk away with 2 to 5 buy-ins every time you play in that game, you're doing something right. You've read these players properly. So who am I to criticize your raise to 625 there when you obviously walk away with a bunch of money here? I just thought you were inviting some trouble by doing that. And you were. You clearly were. You had to make your hand to win on the turn. So, but I don't fault him, you know, for playing the hand, given the way that this came down. He knows his players better than we do, and there's just no way to fold. So when somebody was giving him guff over that, they're wrong. You're getting totally the odds to call. Plus, you know, in this case, he had the aces as outs too, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he did fine. Way to go, Adam.
Congratulations on a big pot.
All right. Well, Scott, have a good trip up there. Keep me posted, and we're looking forward to next week's show when we get to hear all about how much money you lost.
Yeah, remember, it'll be posted a day late, so no
yeah,
panic.
we're gonna do the show on Friday, so which is when we're supposed to do it. We just reward right. Everybody by doing it on Thursday every week, but we'll be posting it sometime on Friday. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.